Welcome to the IoT Security Chats podcast, where we bring you the latest information in cyber and IoT security. From asset and vulnerability management to incident response, hear the experts talk about the latest threats affecting connected devices and how to keep your organization safe.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Priya. I'm the head of customer success here at Assembly, and it's great to be back hosting the Assembly podcast today. On the IoMT, or the Internet of Medical Things front, we're no longer fixated on preventing data breaches, but we're really advancing to strategically and tactfully address threats that impact the healthcare operations and patient well-being. As we recognize and celebrate Cybersecurity Awareness Month and share insights, we have with us today Brian Kayer, the Chief Information Security Officer at Tufts Medicine, to dive deep into IoMT essentials. A little bit of introduction about Brian. Brian is the CISO at Tufts Medicine, overseeing cybersecurity initiatives for Tufts Medical Center, Tufts Children's Hospital, Melrose Wakefield Healthcare, Lowell General Hospital, Home Health Foundation, and New England Quality Care Alliance. Brian has been in the industry for well over 25 years and is a thought leader in cybersecurity, risk management and application security, and more. Prior to Tufts, he was a vice president and director of cyber resilience at Stroh's Friedberg, vice president of information security at State Street, and has served in the United States Army as an intelligence analyst and the Army National Guard as a fire detection control chief for over a decade. My team at Assembly have had the opportunity to work closely with Brian and his teams at Tufts on operationalizing IoMT cybersecurity risk management. Again, Brian, thank you for being here today and sharing your expertise.
Great. Thank you for the introduction.
IoMT is embedded in healthcare now, and we've seen that rapid digitization in this ecosystem. The last few years, especially, and through the pandemic, this acceleration has happened because of alternate care settings and the need for smart monitoring of patient conditions. With this kind of growth, any exploited vulnerabilities in this sector allows malicious actors to gain control of these devices, steal sensitive information, obstruct network traffic, and disrupt critical care delivery. Malicious actors have evolved as well, whether be it in terms of motivation, the mechanisms or techniques they use, or really just turning the underground economic transactions. Adding to this level of acceleration, we're already seeing the consequences of bad security or no security. And unlike other sectors, whether it's retail, banking, etc., bad security or the lack of security considerations while building these technologies can literally cause safety events for the provider and the patient, and even fatality. So Brian, let me start off by really applauding you for taking the ownership and embracing IoMT risk management at Tufts. Your team really drives the efforts, and that, in my opinion, is actually a unique stance where cybersecurity has taken charge and is driving the entire momentum of risk reduction measures with different stakeholders. It surely ensures that there is a comprehensive cyber risk management program. How did that transition work in your favor, and any guidance to offer to different health systems and our listeners?
Yeah, so when I came on board at Tufts Medicine, we didn't really have visibility on what was connected, holistically. So we had pockets of information in a decentralized manner, right? One of the first things I said, we need to really think about an asset management solution that's more in that passive state that's going to be collect. So I started going through different analysis, came upon, Assembly. We did some POC work with you guys and built that out. And then really started saying, what does this do to kind of give me visibility? And, and we started implementing, our vulnerability scanning into it as well, focusing on it, saying, well, now what do I see? What's my risk? What is it connected to? Where is it going through? And start working that process and really helping everybody take a risk management approach to how we're addressing. Because when we had a traditional vulnerability management program previously, where it's always, let's address, here's all the highest vulnerabilities, but it doesn't take an account to kind of where they reside, what's the impact of that device, what are the, you know, how is that connected and what does that do operationally, right? So it always becomes that problem, right? So everybody doesn't want you to touch their, you know, their equipment. We'll take care of it. So one of the things, again, was how focus on getting that visibility, putting together and really kind of, and actually change the name of or, you know, group that does this from vulnerability management to attack surface management. So when I think, you know, when we think about that is really is how are these systems, can they be attacked? So identifying threats, identifying your risks, identifying your pieces and going through that. And then it really started giving visibility to, you know, what do we have on there? What do we need to really fix? And actually it's really helped in a couple stages where we had a vendor who was doing, wanted to, you know, bring another device onto our system. And we look and saying, well, hold on, UX, we have 10 other, you know, devices as well, but they're been not updated, not maintained. So, and it's a great opportunity when they know they're selling you something that new, how do we address some legacy issues? So we're using that opportunity to basically get them to address. So I said, I won't put your new solution on until we address some of the risks that we have on your legacy solutions that you've implemented and upgrade them as part of that process. And actually they were happy to do it. The operational teams weren't even aware of it because it's just something that they didn't have that visibility. So we were actually able to get all upgraded tools and solutions in place and implement this new technology as well at the same time and address. And so that's kind of the idea, like, how do we address risk? It's really bringing that forward. So now we, not only do we reduce the cyber risk, but we also reduce operational risk because we brought upgraded equipment and, you know, better operational effectiveness for the clinical teams too. So those are things that we've seen come in place and really, you know, taking that risk-based approach and bringing it to the operational teams and then back to the vendors as well.
And that's a great closed loop solution, Brian. And I mean, obviously, you touched upon inventory, you touched about visibility of the vulnerabilities and threats and addressing that. And another important component you addressed was just holding vendors accountable. Right. And when you look at IoMT cybersecurity, the kind of challenges healthcare faces is just numerous. In your opinion, any particular that you would rate as top three?
Top three risks. So some of the things that we found out too, when I think about medical IoT security as well, we did a big migration to our EMR to the cloud. And when we went through that process, we actually found out that we had medical devices sending in data up to the management console insecurely, not using TLS, right? So natively, these solutions did not have TLS enabled. And initially, when you have conversations with some of these vendors, they're like, well, that's how it's been built, FDA approved, all this, you know, information. And if you're on a closed network, maybe, you could possibly have an argument saying, okay, sending, you know, data from this EKG device up to the monitoring, you know, the monitor and server on a closed network behind a firewall, you know, on-prem. Okay, I could maybe say that's, we have some mitigating controls to allow that. Now we switch and says, how do we transfer this now to the cloud? So I'm going to send this data up over the internet to a cloud service that's unencrypted. So we had to go back and, you know, work through a different solutions, identifying vendors, and then some vendors, if they weren't going to support native TLS within their products, they were a no-go for us, right? So we're starting to really, more push them too. So some vendors were able to work through that process. It was kind of in their roadmap, but they just, to be honest, they said nobody really asked us for it, which is kind of interesting when you think about where we are in security today, that all this time that no one asked them to secure the transmission of their medical data up. So those are some things I thought were, you know, I think what kind of I think about the areas of risk is every, if we're going to go to cloud services, cloud, you know, hosting, are they, is everybody prepared for that? Right. You know, I could spin up a virtual machine in the cloud. Anybody can, but when I think about that connectivity and then that, so that's kind of, you know, a big area that I think gets needs to be focused on. And also too is, what about care at home? We have a care at home facility. How do we do that? How do we protect, how do we make sure that we're doing this and sharing in and getting that patient data securely as well? So we're really, you know, focused on that aspect as well, making sure that we can have visibility what's going on with that, with the patient and having them have, you know, their data secure. And then the other piece I always look is, you know, third risk I always think is misconfigurations, right? Is so not knowing what we have on our network and how it's being configured and what it's being done. And so somebody doesn't realize that this data is being shared out inadvertently, and it should, you know, could pose a risk. So those are the kind of areas I see that, you know, we've been focusing on it within our organization.
And you would think when it comes to cloud security, those are some of the trivial matters, but on the medical device side, you're actually looking as that being a complex challenge in itself. And that sort of brings me to my next point here. In March of this year, Microsoft actually reported that 99.9% of the account compromise incidents they dealt with actually could have been blocked by using multi-factor authentication. And this statistic really concerns me when it comes to medical devices, rightly so, because we're looking at weak passwords, hard-coded credentials, and shared credentials, not only internally, but also among vendors. Adding to this is the fact that many practitioners use these IoMT devices connected to public domains or guest networks. How can IT, cyber, and biomed collaborate better on this critical step to prevent the use of such weak credentials? And as leaders, another problem I see happening is just obtaining the trust of clinical practitioners for such compensating controls. How can we avoid the security alert fatigue?
So a lot of areas there to cover, but so I think we've implemented, so we talked about 2FA. So we have implemented 2FA across the organization, hands down, needs to have happen. You know, why do we do it? We do look at that as well for monitoring of what devices are connected to our guest network and ensuring that they're not critical devices, right? Walking through that process, because everybody, you know, I understand the need to say, well, this needs to happen, but we need to make sure it's in a secure process. So we're also going to try, you know, look at that, making sure that we're not doing things in, you know, insecure methods, right? Guest, as you noted, guest network being one of them. But, you know, like you said, alert fatigue, how do we address, because there's definitely a lot of alerts that fire up, you know, for us to review. So, but I think it's, for me, it's really goes back to addressing, understanding the control aspect that we're doing, understanding the threat, the risk, and what we're doing from a control process, and then focus on that versus chasing down numerous and, you know, alerts and getting to that alert fatigue, because, you know, so start from that. What are we looking to protect? Why do we want to protect it? How are we going to protect it? What are we going to do when that happens? So then you start with my thought, you know, process around is high fidelity alerting. So I'm going to address something that's going to be something of high fidelity versus just sending a whole bunch of data up and then, you know, thousands of alerts that don't really go unanswered and you miss things that are potentially critical in that path. So those are the aspects we look at. And agree, you know, and in awareness and training, teaching everyone there. So we, as part of our attack surface management team, we've really, we have bio medical engineering teams that are outsourced between the organizations. So we're really now working in a collaborative effort with those organizations to say, how do we now make sure that we're sharing security issues across, addressing that, whether it's a recall from that aspect or addressing particular risks on those, and then making sure that we're targeting those and you know, building that in. So we've, through our attack service management team, we call up, we term this, have this term called the vulnerability assessment teams, right? We call it the VAT. So they're a member of what they call the VAT. So we huddle together, come up, look at the issue. What is the latest vulnerability? What is that criticality? Where's our exposure? What are our potential compensating controls to mitigate that initially? And then what is our corrective action plan to, remove that? So whether, because sometimes it just isn't as easy to like patch, right? And sometimes there is no patches available, right? No patch, vulnerability found, patch not available. How do we address this risk? How do we go through it? So we'll go through that. And then that's what, so we have this huddling team now to come in and collectively address, come up with a plan, course of action to address that risk. That's how we've kind of worked to approach it.
I think some things that worked for me in the past, Brian, is really getting my biomeds and IT folks to sit together at the table, discuss, and then attend what's called as the Nursing Educators Forum. That's something most nursing units have on a monthly basis. And I had a standing 15, 20 minute, update right there just about security controls. And this was not just a one-time thing, but just re-education and retraining throughout the year, not just as an annual LMS module. That's really something that worked to reduce that alert fatigue on the clinician side. And also have a clinical champion in my security efforts. That really worked wonders, I would say. And I mean, prioritization is everything. And as you can see within Assembly, we're actually prioritizing whether it's anomaly detection or vulnerability. And that seems to really help with not just looking at the needle in a haystack, but actually addressing what's the ones that are most critical. What are the weakest points in your environment? Let me shift gears a little bit from the technical front to the administrative front here. One of the growing concerns for healthcare CIOs and CISOs is staffing. Despite having robust, cybersecurity strategies and tactics, and also introduction of AI ML-based technologies, recruiting that blended expertise has been a challenge. And we're struggling that not just the 2 years, but forever with blended expertise, but more so now post-pandemic. To ensure a prevention-first culture, what are some of the strategies you've adopted with your teams to address this, shortage or lack of blended expertise and ensuring a proactive methodology with risk management?
I'll acknowledge, yes. Staffing, what I haven't had as necessarily any reduction in my team, which is great. Nobody's left my organization, but I required individuals from IT backgrounds as they came into my group. So working that process is, here's the definition of the job that we have to do. Here's the role. Here's the description of what needs to be accomplished. Do they have the necessary skills? Not in all cases. So then we put together a roadmap for success, right? How do I get there? What is the skill sets I need to get those individuals, whether some of it's going to be as I'll look at like application certification. What applications are they touching? What are those pieces they do? Is there a certification process? If it doesn't, it doesn't have to be, when I say it doesn't have to be a formal certification that says I passed, this thing, but do you know, and are you reaching out to be a SME on the technology that's going to be most closely tied to your, avenue of expertise, right? That's going to be one. So I want to make sure that they understand that. And then I'm going to give them other focus on kind of the broader cybersecurity arena things. What else things do you need to do? Attend, webinars or other training areas where you're going to understand other aspects of risk or threats coming up. So you're going to understand what do we need to now start applying to my role. So if I have a base foundation of the skill set, for the technology, and I can make sure that I now understand the risk that I need to be working through towards those two pieces. So now I could become that subject matter expert on that. We are then running crisis management exercises. So we do some of that as well. So we have in our organization, we purchase a crisis simulation tool that runs through a series of, I think we have about 40 to 50 different scenarios that we run through. So one I'm right now running with our, I call that vulnerability assessment team, which includes stakeholders in our bio med teams on a 0-day exploit. What do we do, right? So let's run through this scenario, make sure that we're aware. So bringing those and then just broader security awareness to your organization is kind of the next thing, and agree that's kind of that next level focus is the security champions, right? How do I get clinical people to also be security champions? Everybody wants to. How do they become part of that? How do they provide? Because they might see something that they, you know, awareness of risk. What should I be doing? So we've also ourselves built, we've actually gone through and created 20 minutes, like 10 episodes of customized animated training videos focused on specifically healthcare and security. So we'll take it kind of like real world scenarios, maybe not always specific to our organization, but things that we've seen out there. And in a hospital setting, we take this and then walk through a specific security issue, right? Somebody picking up a USB drive. What should I do with this? Should I plug it in and see what it is? No. So we go through like what could happen. So they're animated to kind of lighten up the context of it, but also has a very important message. So we do that as we're launching that process through all orientation. So we're doing it with clinical orientation as well, and then all new hires, so they go through it. So it just gives, you know, what to do, what steps, what should you take, what are the actions that you as an individual need to think about, so we could help build, like you said, I agree, that security champion space. We're not there yet. Sometimes it's hard. I don't think everybody understands, you know, how important security is. I look at it, cybersecurity is patient safety. They're synonymous in my opinion. So that's kind of what it's kind of the message that we try to focus out there to get that. So those are all the challenges. And then, you know, then it's focused on, so then retention. What are we making sure? How do we make, you know, giving people the roles, making their job challenging, but not overworking, right? So you want to give them excitement to do their job, that they're not stuck in a dead end role. So the way I've organized my cybersecurity team is kind of creating what I call like towers of success. So focusing in, everyone works on getting their subject matter knowledge, expertise, and they get to a point where they feel that they've kind of reached the max and they're interested in something else. And we can then swap roles. Now I'm getting cross knowledge and cross sharing of, and continuing to keep the team, you know, focused and informed and wanting to stay here. So versus trying to go out and recruit because that's a challenge to find somebody to do that. And then they may not still have all the skills that you need. So having a kind of ongoing practice for education of the team.
I think that's a huge plus point when it comes to retaining and having that high retention rate is, you know, providing that autonomy to see how that interest grows over time, and especially in an evolving space like cyber. And Brian, you brought up a really interesting point that cybersecurity is patient safety. And one of the things I read last night was that Joint Commission starting Jan 1st of 2023, they're actually requiring a safety briefing on day one of their arrival to a healthcare organization. And in this, surveyors are expecting health systems to be prepared on how they respond or how they should respond to an emergency such as fire, smoke, or anything. And in my opinion, any safety events, incidents related to cyber risks and downtimes also, you know, classify as those emergencies. So I think it's awesome that you're doing those, crisis management exercises. That's just going to go a long way. Sort of looping all of this together, any specific frameworks or standards or guidance that you would like to recommend to our listeners today?
So we've adopted the NIST cybersecurity framework, and also, I guess, in pair with the HITRUST cybersecurity framework. So I like NIST. I've used it in other organizations because it's just an easy way to think about the five: identify, detect, protect, respond, recover. How are we doing in that? And what are those areas there? When I say we pair it there, there's overlap and capabilities within the HITRUST framework as well. But it, you know, gets to just, you know, how are we then working specifically on HIPAA, right? So how do we, you know, because obviously that's an area of regulation for us. So it's really kind of the merge of those two is where we focus on and just addressing all that. So that's how I've aligned my team, kind of broken it out. We then go through each thing where each of the individuals my team have to focus on to drive, you know, the capabilities, at least in those, you know, five functional domains from the NIST cybersecurity framework.
Thank you, Brian. I mean, this is great insights for our listeners and, you know, other users of Assembly. So Brian, thank you for being here with us today and sharing your expertise. These are, again, excellent takeaways. And on behalf of Assembly, we appreciate you taking the time and look forward to our continued collaboration. And listeners, if you have any questions or would like to learn about what Assembly has to offer, contact us at info@assembly.com. Until then, take care and stay safe.